Okay, we're holding up Haddock on the bays, fifth line of the wide lines. Everyone's been talking about the question. The Mishnah had been talking about the, had been going back to the idea that we touched on earlier in the Masechta, the Ksubas Benin Dichrin. The Takana Chachamim, that a woman's Ksuba is to be inherited specifically by her own children. And then the rest of the Yerusha is divided up among all the heirs equally. And we were talking about, the Gemara had been talking about the issue, do we apply this din only if both of the wives passed away before the father, or would the same rule apply if one of them died while he was alive and the other one outlived him? As Rashi had pointed out yesterday, that on the face of it, you could take the view that if one of them died while he was alive and the other one after he died, so then you have one group of children is coming and collecting it as a choiv, as a debt that was owed to them via their mother, and the other ones are inheriting directly from their father, and that's likely to cause friction between them. Why are you guys entitled to more than we are, basically? That's the Gemara had been discussing yesterday, that issue of whether the Takana applies in that case. If one of the women died while the father was alive and the other one after he died. So this is where we're up to, the fifth line of the wide lines. The Gemara says, V'achas b'chayev, v'achas b'moyse tanoi. In fact, this discussion about whether the Takana of Ksubas Benin Dichrin applies if one of the wives died while the husband was alive and the other one after him, this is actually a machloikas tanoi. If one of the women died while the father was alive and the other one after he died, the children of the first wife can tell the children of the second wife, look, fine, you guys want to collect your mother's ksuba as a choiv. So effectively, your mother is a creditor to our father, and you're coming as your mother's heirs, therefore, to collect that debt that was owed to her. Good. So take your mother's tzuba and leave. Which the point is, Rashi says, when they're saying and leave, implies that after each set of children collect their mother's ksuba, there's not going to be anything left. The Gemara touched on before the concept of moisav dinner, the concept of moisav achavacha, moisav dinner, which we're going to talk about more on Tzadik Aleph, and in the Mishnah at the bottom of Tzadik Aleph Amud Aleph, the concept that the takana of ksubas benin dichrin was never, when you get down to it, it's a takana de rabbanan. You're saying that one group of children are entitled to a certain part of the estate in payment of their mother's ksuba, and the rest you're saying is going to be divided equally. There has to be a rest. If there isn't a rest, as we're going to talk about later, if there isn't at least one dinner of the estate more than that, then effectively that takana of the chachamim is being mevatel, the whole din of inheritance, minatara, which minatara, all children are supposed to inherit equally except for the bechor who gets double. You can't do that. That's why you have that
from two women.
No, that's the point. That's why you have to have this moisav dinner business. That's why you have to have that after the ksubas benin dichrin is taken care of, there's still something, there's still a certain amount of property left to be divided among all the heirs.
Apitera,
there's no ksubas benin dichrin.
Well, there's two women. Well, who inherits and who doesn't?
Nothing. I mean, according to the Torah, you forget about the women. Wives don't inherit from their husband anyway, in Torah. The children inherit. But if he was married to one woman and had three children with her, and then he was married to another woman and had four children with her, so fine, the Bechor is going to get the double portion. Each one of them is going to get one-seventh or one-eighth or whatever of the estate. It's going to be divided equally among all of them, except the Bechor gets double. What the Chachamim are doing, they're modifying.
Of both women?
If I remember correctly, Bechor L'Nachla, there's only one, so it would only be the father's Bechor. So they're the first one born from the first wife. As far as Pidyon HaBen, it's the first one from each wife, it goes according to the mother, but as far as Nachla, it goes according to the father, if I remember correctly. And that's not really Negea right now. The point is, the Chachamim are telling us that instead you're subtracting from the Nechasim. Each of these women has a ksuba of 200 or 1,000 or whatever the amount might be, depending whether it was just Iker or Tosfos or what have you. You're saying, earmark that, set that aside. Only the three children from the first wife, for example, are inheriting that, and then we're splitting the rest evenly. What we're saying is that the Chachamim don't want the Sakana to override the din of Yerusha Daraisa. So only if there's more property left over after that are we going to do that. Benanas is saying over here, now Benanas' case, is, we're talking about that...
Midaraisa,
there's no such thing as inheriting the Ksuba. Midaraisa, we just split the estate evenly among all the children.
Okay, so
well, the lady first, so the lady gives Ksuba first, right?
No, Midaraisa, there's no such thing. Midaraisa, there's nothing that the children inherit
the
No, but if she outlives him, of course she collects her Ksuba anyway, although that's a different machlokas with a Ksuba, Midaraisa, or Rabbanan. We're not getting into that right now. If she dies before him, if the wife dies before the husband, she's not entitled to a ksuba, but there's still the takana of ksubas bin indichrin says that we still set aside that money that she would have gotten if she outlived her husband, and we give it to her children.
It'd be nice to...
Yeah. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the reason behind the takana was the Chacham wanted to make sure a person is going to be willing to give a nice size nod to his daughter to see who he is. Otherwise, he might figure, you know what, I mean, it's going to end up going out of my family, out of my shevet anyway, why should I bother? Whereas if he knows that it's going to be eventually inherited by his own grandchildren, then he's more willing to... So this case, when Benanas is saying that the children of the first wife can say to the children of the second wife, you're only collecting it as a chayiv, so take it and go, meaning we're not even talking about it. There is no moser dinner. Once they collect theirs, then there's only exactly enough left for the children of the first wife to collect their mother's ksuba. Rabbi Akiva says no. The Nachla has jumped away from the children of the first wife, the one who died first, and it falls to inheritance to the children of the second wife. Now, my lab v'hokamiflegi. So isn't the machloikas as follows? The marasava achas v'chayav achas moseh yeshlan ksubas minin dichrin. So Benanas is arguing that yes, the takana of ksubas benin dichrin still applies in that case. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, in other words, forget moser dinner or not moser dinner. Rabbi Akiva is saying either way, there's no ksubas benin dichrin to the children of the one who died first. Because that's the thing. Shouldn't we assume that Benanas is holding, since one wife died while the husband was alive and the other one died only after him, because that's what we mean when we say the first and the second, we don't mean the first one he married, the second one he married, we mean the one who died first and the one who died second, and one died after him. So Benanas is saying that fine, the children of the first one, the one who died first, say that fine. You collect your mother's ksubas bin dichrin and then leave to the children of the second one. And then take your ksubas bin dichrin and leave. There's nothing more here for you, for us to divide with you, because once you take yours and we take ours, then there's nothing left. Which means that there is the concept of ksubas bin dichrin. Then that's why they're saying to the first group, go ahead and collect your mother's ksubah. That's according to Benanas. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, who's saying that the Nachla jumps away from the first children and all goes to the second, effectively, then he's saying that we don't apply ksubas bin indichrin then. That we, as Rashi had said before, at the top of the Amud, in that case, when you have one died while he's alive, one died only after him, you're going to have friction between the children, that the ones whose mother was still alive at the time when he died are going to be complaining, why are you guys entitled to more than we are? And therefore we shouldn't. So therefore we see that it's machlokes tanoim, whether we apply ksubas bin indichrin when one wife outlived him and one not. The answer is... the answer is not necessarily. Amar Rava, Ashkachtinu l'Rabbanan de Bei Rav. I found the Rabbanan of the Yeshiva of Rav, or Bei Rav could just mean the Yeshiva. The Yasvi v'Kamri, they were sitting and saying as follows. No, that's not the meaning of the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Benanas. De Kulei Alma Achav B'Chayav Achsmosi Yeshlan Ksubas Bin Indichrin. No, both Rabbi Akiva and Benanas might agree that even in that case, you do say Ksubas Bin Indichrin. Each one is entitled to their mother's ksuba. And in particular, the first group, the one whose mother died when he was alive, are entitled to their mother's ksuba under the ksuba bin indichrin rule. Rather, the machlokes between them is, do we consider one, we just said before that there needs to be, again, we said before there needs to be moiser dinner, there needs to be some estate left over. In order to apply ksubas bin indichrin, because again the Chachamim didn't want their takana to override the din daraisa. So the question is, if we have like this, that if we have Daraisa, that you would just split the Nachla evenly among everybody, and as opposed to Dirabanan, where we're setting aside the value of the Ksuba and giving it to the Benin different, what we're saying is that the Machloikas would be, do we consider that one Ksuba remains as a moiser for the other one? In other words, what we have is, think of it, when the first group wants to collect their mother's ksuba, because their mother died while their father was still alive. What we're saying, now, there is more nechassim left, because the second set of children, the children of the second wife, plan to collect out of that. Well, do we consider, is that left over there, that the second group of children plans to collect for their mother's ksuba, is that considered moiser or not? Do we consider, let's take a concrete case. The guy died, he left over 500 zuz. The first wife's ksuba was 300, the second wife's ksuba was 200, let's say. The first group are coming and saying, let's collect our mother's ksuba, let's collect the 300 zuz. So one way we could look at it is we could say, well, no, the second set of children are also entitled out of the estate to 200 zuz for their mother's ksuba. Yes, their mother was alive at the time when their father died, so she was entitled to it as a regular almana collecting her ksuba. Later on, she died. They're in line now to inherit it. So therefore, you say, not 200 is also reserved. It's reserved for Bali Choyv. They become effectively Bali Choyv against their father. So in that case, you would argue, well, you have 300, you have 200, that uses up the entire 500, no moiser dinner, so no ksubas bin indichrin. Or you could argue that no ksubas, because again, ksubas bin indichrin doesn't apply. If you're dividing up the whole estate to satisfy ksubas, then there's no moiser dinner.
And if, let's say, it was one extra dinner.
Let me give a simpler case. If a guy had two wives, this is what we'll talk about in the next mission. A guy had two wives, and both of them died while he was alive. Again, one had a ksuba of 300, one had a ksuba of 200. If what we're saying is if the estate is exactly 500, then there is no ksubas bin indichrin. Because then the takano, ksubas bin indichrin, is going to prevent us from doing the yerusha the way the Torah says it, which is that you split it equally among everybody. So then we're going to say, forget ksubas bin indichrin, no 300, no 200, there is seven children here, or whatever it is, so we're just going to give each one 1/7 or 1/8, whatever it is, out of 500. And forget ksubas bin indichrin. Here we're talking about, though, the wrinkle is, again, one died while the father was alive, so at that point, once he dies, then ksubas bin indichrin should kick in, and they should be getting theirs. The other one, their mother was still alive when he died, so she herself is entitled to her ksuba. Then she dies and her children are entitled to it. So one way we could argue is that, well, now you have two sets of children who are both going to be collecting their mother's ksubas. One as ksubas bin indichrin, one as a regular inheriting from their mother, who was entitled to it from their father. You're giving away the whole Yerusha as ksubas. So there's no moiser dinner, there's no extra dinner. Therefore, you can't do that. Or you might argue, the alternative is that you, so then we, no, so, right, so then we would say we'd go back to the original Din Torah and forget about ksuba bin indichrin.
But why not leave the regal ksuba or the second wife who outlives the father? Forget about ksuba bin indichrin and divide the estate.
No, so the other way we could look at it is, we could say like this, we could say, if I can, the fact that the children of the wife who outlived her husband are entitled to their 200, fine, they're entitled to that as a choyv. That's like a regular Baal Choyv. So you could argue then, 300 out of the estate is meant to be given as ksubas bin indichrin. Well, you have. There's 200 left. That 200 is going to have to be given to a Baal Choyv. It doesn't matter. The same, and the Rabbanon, Debei Rav, that Rabba met up with, was saying that the same thing indeed would apply to a regular Baal Choyv as to these children who are inheriting their mother's ksuba.
Which ksuba is more important, the regular ksuba bin indichrin?
That's not the issue. The issue is, do we apply the din of ksubas bin indichrin in this case?
So can you give an example of when we apply the
well, that the example we would apply, the example we would apply ksubas bin indichrin is if you left over 501 zuz in the scenario I'm talking about. So good, you'll give 300 to the first group, you'll give 200 to the second group, and everybody will divide evenly among them the one remaining dinar. As opposed to, if there's only 500, that's the question. Are we still giving them 300 and them 200, and we're not going to be applying the Din Yerusha Min HaTorah at all? Or do we say, we're giving them their 300? Really, now there's left 200. Except that everybody has, all of these seven heirs, all of these Yoshim, have an equal responsibility to pay off that 200 zuz that's owed to a Baal Choyv. Or in this case, the Baal Choyv happens to be the child happens to be some of the Yoshim themselves.
Just wipe out the Torah, saying it goes according to the
Rabbanan. No, because the Chacham are trying not to make their Takana. Because we could, again, we could argue, we're going to learn on Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis, mitzvah la yisayimim l'shrei achayv avim, the yisayimim have a mitzvah to pay back their father's debt. So we could argue that the 200 that's left is not being paid out as a ksuba, effectively. It's being paid out as a choyv, as if it was a regular debt. So the same way, forget about if there was no ksubas finin dichrin involved over here. If there was just plain old, the father died, he left 200 zuz worth of debt, and all the children are inheriting the estate, forget there's no ksubas finin dichrin to be applied, let's say. We'd still say that we have to take out 200 zuz from the estate, and each of the yisayim has to give up an equal share of their portion in order to pay off that chayv. We could argue the same thing over here. You're not overriding Din Torah by doing that. It so happens that in this case, the creditors themselves happen to be some of the Yoshim, the big deal. So we could say that that's the machloikas between Rebbe Akiva and Ben Nanas.
When you have a surplus, something extra above these two subas.
Then there's no question you do.
Yeah. But the question is if it's just a couple dollars extra, you just do it formally and you're happy about it?
Yeah. As long as you have one dinner, So that's what we're arguing. They're arguing about does the second ksuba is it considered moiser? Do we consider it the equivalent of a regular debt, which in that case the same thing would apply to a regular Baal Chayv, or not? So Ben Nanas would hold that the ksuba is considered a moser. So we would say, in other words, once we pay off the first group, there's 300. And then at that point, we can do that. The 200 is going to have to be given to the second group because it's their mother's ksuba. Fine, no different than we would if they were just a third party who was owed 200 zuz out of the estate. Whereas Rebbe Akiva would hold that no. We would say that any money that's owed to anybody else, whether it's the children themselves or whether it's a Baal Chayv, is still considered. We can't consider it moiser. We have to consider as if that doesn't belong to the estate at all. Yes, because it has to be paid out. Therefore, we ignore that. When we're calculating the value of the estate, we said the value of the estate is 500, but 200 of it is owed to a Baal Chayv, or in this case, to the children of the wife who outlived her husband and then died. Therefore, we only have 300. So what's been indifferent is 300. You can't do that. You need moiser dinner.
So, according to Rabbi Akiva, if I understand well, the moiser is the moiser to the estate.
Right.
And according to Bananas, the moiser is moiser that
is moiser above the ksubas bin indifferent, even though that happens to be owed to somebody else.
That's
yes.
That's
what we're saying. So that's what Rabba says. I found the Bnei HaYeshiva saying that. And I told them, no, the Baal Chayv kolamle pligid to have a moiser. No, there's no question if that money is owed to a Baal Chayv, then it's considered moiser, because all of them have an equal obligation to pay that off. They're all equally sharing in that mitzvah, paying off their father's debt. The machloikas would only be in a ksuba. But yeah, it would still be the same idea that we would say, in other words, it's not Rabbi Akiva and Ben Nanas are arguing about the basic concept whether ksubas bin indichrin applies if one died while the husband was alive and the other one after he died. It's strictly on this issue, do we consider the amount that's going to be paid to the second set of Yoshim, do we consider that a moser or not? Do you have to have 501 or is it enough if you have 500?
What is a moser, basically?
That's the question, yeah. Maskech Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef asks on that, Ihochi, Rabbi Akiva, I'm a kfakov to Nachla, then why is Rabbi Akiva using this expression that at this point the Nachla has jumped away from the first group and is all in the hands of the second group? Meaning, in other words, Rabbi, this is what we were understanding Rabbi Akiva to be saying, therefore, that there's no ksubas bin indichrin to be paid. Why is he using that expression? Im yesh moiser dinner, mean by the way, he should say, if there's a moiser dinner, then you pay off the ksubas bin indichrin, and if not, then not. The way he's saying kvar kofta nachla implies that it doesn't matter. No matter what happens, the first group never gets the ksubas bin indichrin. Elam Rabbi Yosef, b'achas b'chaye b'achas b'moiseh kum b'flegi. No, as a matter of fact, they are indeed arguing about this achas b'chaye b'achas b'moiseh. So Rabbi Kivitz, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the estate is 500, 501, 1,000, doesn't matter. once you have that one of them, once you have that one of the wives outlived her husband, then there is no ksubas bin nidhirin for the further for the children of the one who died while the husband was alive. And that, and therefore that would indeed be the machlokes, which is what we were getting at before. V'hani tanoi, ki hani tanoi. And as a matter of fact, your basis continues. Benanis and Rebbe Akiva are arguing the same machlokes as the tanoim of the following braisa. The Tanya, Nasser is a shenu mesa. If a man married a first wife and then she died, Nasser is a shenio mesu. Then he married a second woman and then he died. So the children of this one, we're going to discuss later what we mean by this one. At this point, the assumption is it means this one, meaning the wife who outlived her husband. Let's give them names, Rachel and Leah. So Rachel died while her husband was alive. Leah outlived him. So at this point, we're assuming that we mean that Leah's children come la'acha. What?
The survivor. The one
yeah. Come la'acha misa. They come after the death, after their mother dies, and they can collect their mother's ksuba. Reb Shimon Omer, im yesh moisa dinner, if there is an extra dinner left over after you satisfy the claims of both sides, eilu noitam ksuba simen, veilu noitam ksuba simen, and each group is going to get their mother's ksuba, v'im lav chokim b'shoba, and if not, then forget about ksuba simen and dichrin, everybody divides up the estate equally. Or not, actually Rashi says to be exact, you still do have, there's no question you have to pay off, there's no question you have to pay off the ksuba of the one who survived her husband, because that's the regular takana of ksuba. Forget about ksuba's been indifferent. The regular takana of ksuba is a woman outlives her husband, she's entitled to her ksuba. So there's no question that one has to be paid off. What we mean is, we don't do ksuba's been indifferent to the first group, the one whose mother died while the husband was alive. Instead, whatever's left after we pay off the second ksuba, the 200, in the scenario I was giving before, we split up evenly. Well, okay, yes, you give a double portion to the bechor. We're not getting into that right now. What about it? I mean, Nichsitzon Barzel belong to... Nichsitzon Barzel are part of the Ksuba, basically. When we talk about the Ksuba, generally speaking, we're talking... Other things being equal, usually we're talking about the Ksuba consists of the Iker, the 100, 200, or 200, the Toisvus, anything that the husband voluntarily added, and the Nichsitzon Barzel. Yeah. So my lab v'ha kamisligi. So again, it seems that that's the same machloikas. The Marisova achas v'chayev achas v'moise yeshlem Ksuba spin in Dichrin. That... Reb Shimon is saying that if one of them died while he was alive and one after and one afterwards, then you have ksubas bin indichrin. So as long as you have moisa dinner, then you do that. Omar sover achas b'chayev achas moisa inam ksubas bin indichrin. Whereas the Tanakama would hold that not. We're saying that only bonei shel zu, which we're assuming means the second wife, collect their mother's ksuba because that's a regular chayv. That's not ksubas bin indichrin. And the first ones are out of luck. They're not really out of luck. They get their for the same reason that we said before, because we don't want the whole point is we don't want the heirs to be complaining. How come you guys are entitled to something extra which we're not? Basically, why are you guys entitled to subas bin indichrin when we're collecting our mother's subah as well? But it's on a different basis. We're collecting it because the debt that was owed to our mother. You're collecting it. Your mother was never in line to get it because she died anyway. You're only collecting it because of subas bin indichrin. It's not fair. So then that would be the exact same machlokes, or the Tanakama and Reb Shimon, and would be the same as Benanas and Reb Akiva. The answer is loy. The kulam achas b'chayev achas moisi yeshlem ksubas bin indichrin. No, again, not necessarily. You could say in this last braisa also, everybody agrees that in this case we do apply ksubas bin indichrin. B'hach b'dinu mekauki. In the case that we just mentioned, where one died while he's alive and one died after him. B'hach b'dinu mekauki. So rather, the machlokus between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon is that. Given that there has to be moisa dinner, fine, we're assuming at this point everybody agrees with that concept. Does that moisa dinner necessarily have to consist of karka? Or is it good enough to consist of metalpulin? Marsava makauke and metalpulin loy. So the Tanakama would be saying that the moisa dinner has to consist davka of karka. So there has to be, when we say that the estate has to be at least 501 in the scenario that I was giving, in order to apply ksubas bin indichrin, it means the one has to be karka. Umar savar filo metalpili, whereas Reb Shimon would argue that even if it's metalpilin, Reb Shimon had said, what was the expression Reb Shimon had used? Im yesh moisa dinner, then each one gets their mother's ksuba, implying it doesn't matter what kind of moisa dinner, as long as a moisa dinner exists, even if it's only metalpilin. Question is, when we mop this Amrit Ta'achi, So how could you explain the braisa that way? Patnan, we learn in our Mishnah, or not in our Mishnah, but in the next Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud, Reb Shimon Omer, Afilu Yesham Nachasim She'en Laim Nachrayus, even if you have in the estate, there is above and beyond the amount for the two ksuvos, there is even if there's Nachasim She'en Laim Nachrayus, which is Gemara terminology for Metalpolin. They don't count for anything. Unless you have nechasim shein achrayis, meaning sheyesh lanachrayis, meaning karka, worth at least a dinner above the two ksubas. So if anything, Reb Shimon is the one who holds that you have to have karka, not the Tanakh. Ela hacha b'din m'shabdi from
the dinner.
Because he explicitly says that there has to be nechasim sheyesh lanachrayis. Okay, so let's try differently. Let's say then that the machloekus would be, what if you have the dinner is mishuban? So what do we mean by mishuban? So the Rambam holds it means, for example, that their father was owed a debt. He has a shibud on somebody else's karka worth at least the dinner. So right now, that money is not in their hands because the debt has yet to be collected, but that shibud exists on the dinner. Rashi says the other way around, that there is that the father left over karka worth at least a dinner, but it's for shibud to somebody else. Instead of him receiving it as a shibud, he owes it as a shibud. Yeah. So the Tanakhama would be holding that the Moisa dinner has to dab to be from Bnei Chorin, from property that's owned free and clear by the husband, not that he owes somebody else or somebody owes him, as the case may be. Whereas Reb Shimon would say it doesn't matter. Moisa dinner is Moisa dinner. It doesn't matter if it's Meshubad. It exists. It's good enough.
You say Meshubad is a Moisa dinner. It has to be
same logic as we argued before. Subanasis Moisa Lachabatar. Remember, Rabba had said before that Baal Chayiv, no, there's no question, can be considered a Moiser. Since the Yisraimim have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debt.
If you're owning
the Chayiv. If the father was owed the Chayiv?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But so,
he is different. He is, they owe the Chayiv.
Yeah, well, that, according to the two different explanations. Right. But that's, okay, so if it's that they owe the chayiv, then we'd say, in accordance with what Rabbah said before, it doesn't matter that they owe it. The fact is it's still in their possession right now. And all of them have an equal share in the mitzvah of paying off their father's debt. So therefore it can still count as moiser. And according to the Rambam, the explanation would be the other way around, that yes, they owed it. Right now they don't have it. But you could look at it either way. You could look at it that right now they don't have it in their possession, and one or another thing could happen that they don't end up getting it for whatever reason. On the other hand, it is owed to them and they have a shibud on it. Okay, the problem with that, ihach yudav shimon omer im yesham moisa dinner, then what's the expression of Shimon is using if there is a moisa dinner? Obviously, we're talking about there is a moisa dinner. Kiven sheyesham moisa dinner, Mibola, you should be saying, because there is a moisa dinner. In other words, I don't care you Tanakhama are saying there's a Moisa dinner, but it's only Meshubad, and therefore you don't want to count it. I don't care. The fact is there is a Moisa dinner. That's good enough. So what's Im Yesham, which implies maybe there is and maybe there isn't? If the scenario we're talking about over here is there definitely is, and the question just is who has the Shibud on it? So another possibility, let's say they're arguing about, what about if there's less than a dinner left over? Is that good enough? Mar saw dinner and pachas midinner loy. The Tanakhama would be saying that only specifically if there's a dinner, then do you apply to less than a dinner. But if there's less than a dinner left over, then no. Or mar saw after the pachas. Then there's no moisa dinner, and therefore no ksumas bin indichren. Or mar saw after the pachas midinner. Whereas Reb Shimon might argue that even if there's less than a dinner, it's good enough as long as there's something extra. There would be a few purpos left, but it's not to be a full dinner. Shittim Rukabetis talks about actually what we'd have a minute to say that if we always called it a moisa dinner. And in fact, I'm in the Gemara Act right now about Reb Shimon dinner car. Reb Shimon explicitly says a dinner. So the Shittim Rukabetis talks about that maybe we could argue, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara on the next Mishnah, that maybe there's less than the actual valuation that's done by Beis Din shows that it's less than a dinner worth, but maybe somebody is willing to overpay for it and pay a dinner. Maybe that would count as long as he can get a dinner for it. Okay, but the fact is, v'har Rav Shimon dinner kam, Rav Shimon uses the expression an actual dinner. V'chi teima epuch, so you might say then that let's flip it around. Now usually when the Gemara uses the word epuch, it means flip around, say that the opinions have been reversed, that what we thought, the opinion that we thought is Rav Shimon is actually the Rabbanan, and then the opinion that we thought is the Rabbanan is actually Rav Shimon. Tosfos, in fact, does learn it that way. Right? That epoch over here means similar to what it means elsewhere in Shas. That means that maybe you'd argue the opinions have been reversed. But Rashi says that no, epoch over here means let's flip around the svara that we're using. We started with the assumption that when the Braisa said boim v'neshal zu la'achamisa, we assumed that zu means the children of the wife who survived her husband, Leah. Let's flip around that assumption and assume that's talking about Rachel, the one who died first. So then we would be saying that the Tanakhama is saying that the children of the first wife collect their mother's suba, which means it's suba's been indifferent. And Rav Shimon is saying only if there's a moisa dinner do they get it. If not, then not. And then we would continuing with the understanding that we just said over here, we would argue then that you still have the machloikas whether it's good enough to have a dinner or even less than a dinner. So we would say then the Tanakhama would say it doesn't matter, even though there's less than a dinner left over, there's only 500 and a half dinner, you still give 300, 200, and they all split the half a dinner. Whereas Rav Shimon is saying, no, only im yesh moisa dinner, only if there's a full dinner. The problem with that is, Tanakhama de Masnis and Nami dinner kama. The Tanakhama of our next Mishnah over here at the bottom of the Amud says one dinner. And the Tanakhama of that Mishnah is the same Tanakhama of the Braisa, because they're both having the same argument with Rav Shimon. So either way you look at it, you can't say Rav Shimon would believe that less than a dinner is good enough, because he used the word dinner. You can't say the Tanakhama would hold that less than a dinner is good enough, because in the following Mishnah they also use the word dinner.
So you can't do that.
Ella, ki hanach tere lishni kamoi ve'epoch. No, what you have, lishni kamoi ve'epoch. No, but what you can do is you can use one of the first two answers that we tried to propose, and then we can flip around the logic that we were using. Namely, we started with saying that maybe it means that the machloikas is whether there's a dinner of karka or whether it's good enough if there's a dinner of metalkalin. And we shot that down because Rav Shimon is saying that you need to have a dinner of karka. But that was when we assumed that the Braisa was saying that the Tanakhama had said the first group is not entitled to their mother's tzuba, only the second one. If now we flip it around and we say the Tanakhama meant that they are entitled, there is tzuba spin indifferent, and the children of the first one, of Rachel, and Rav Shimon is the one who's saying you need moisa dinner, well then fine. Rav Shimon is the one in the Mishnah who says you need to have moisa dinner of karka, so fine. And the Braisa, he'd be saying the same thing, that only if there's moisa dinner of karka. Similarly, the second answer we tried to use, which is that it was a difference whether it was Bnei Chorin versus Meshuvadim. Same idea. As long as we now understand Braisa to be talking about the question whether the children of the first wife of Rachel get the Ksubas Bnei Chorin or not, as opposed to we assumed it meant that we started with the assumption that the Braisa meant that we're dealing with the second one. The second one definitely get their mother's Ksuba, and the only question is the first one. If we understand it, rather, that the Tanakhama is saying the first one's definitely get, and Rav Shimon is arguing and saying not always, then that could also work if we use the Bnei Chorin versus Meshubadim answer. Amma Zutra Meshmeidra Papa, Hilchata, bottom line halacha, Achas b'chayev v'achas v'moisa, yesh lam ksubas min indichrin, that yes, if one wife dies while the husband is alive and the other one dies after him, yesh lam ksubas min indichrin, then yes, their children do get the ksubas min indichrin, the children of the first wife, as long as there's moisa, and ksuba nachas moisa v'chavata, and furthermore, that we can use the value of the second ksuba as the moisa. Again, in the scenario over here, if the estate was 500, then fine, we can say the 200 is a chayev, that's owed to the second set of children, that 200 counts as moiser. That 200 counts as moiser. So we can give the first group their 300, and then we can give the second group their 200, and it doesn't matter that there's no moiser dinner. It doesn't matter that there's no extra dinner, because that 200 is considered a moiser. So the Gemara asks, why did Marzutra and Rapapa have to say both of these points? I can understand fine. If he had only told us the first part, that that even one while he was alive and one died after him, that's been different applies. But he hadn't told us the second point, that the value of the second ksuba, the 200, is considered the moser. Good, that wouldn't have clarified things. Then we would have thought it still means that you have to have 501, not 500. If he hadn't clarified the second point, ksuba nafas moser l'chavata. Let him just say the second did, that one ksuba can be considered a moser for the other one. Now, obviously, what scenario would that happen? The second one is considered moser for the first. Obviously, that implies that there's a first and a second, meaning that there's one who died while he's alive and one who died after him. So what does he need to tell us? Automatically, we know the first part of what he said. So why does he need to say both? The answer is, I Ashmin and Hochi, because if he had told us only that Ksuba Nas is Moshe Lachavata, Hava Mina, then I would have thought he's talking about a scenario like this. Suppose this guy married three wives. And by the way, in this whole discussion, we're mentioning how two wives, three wives. We obviously, this was before Chaim Yabed Agershim. We could assume that it was together, but it could have been sequentially, one after the other. Anyway, it could have been one after the
other.
No, the Rabbeinu Gershom was in the time in the times at the end of the time of the Goyim, so a few hundred years after the Chassidus Gemara. Yeah. So he married three wives. Umeisu shtayim b'chayev v'achas umeisu. Two of them died while he's alive. One died after him. V'ach the ma'is v'achamisa yoledes nekevahi. The one who died after him gave birth to a girl. V'la bas yerusha. So then.
Two
before and one after. So the two who died while he was alive had sons, and the one who outlived him had only daughters. Well, daughters don't inherit where there are sons. So therefore, lav bas yerusha. So the daughter is not standing in line to yarshin anything anyway. So therefore, there's no. What would she be able to inherit? In this case, if her mother outlived her father, then no, she's not in line to inherit anything. If her mother had died while she was alive, while the husband was alive, then let's not go there. Actually, like this, a daughter doesn't inherit when there are sons. Her mother was supposed to get her. Her mother is supposed to get her ksuba. Then her mother died, and her mother died. Now is she inheriting from her mother? Yes, she is inheriting because it was a debt that's owed to her mother, and now she and it was a debt that was owed to her mother, and now she's her mother's heir. Fine.
Is she?
Yep. The sons are sons from different mothers.
That's the point.
Right. This mother had only this daughter. So then that daughter is going to inherit the debt that was owed to her mother. But the point is, she's not getting it from the point of view of Ksubas Benin Dichrin. She's only getting it as a debt. There was never any possibility that she would inherit any part of the estate, because daughters don't inherit in Din Torah when there are sons. So therefore, what was the whole point we were saying before? The Osilin Suya, that if you have, you're going to give favoritism to some of the children over others, then there might be an argument. Why are you guys getting something more than we're not? Well, a daughter is not in a position to do that anyway, because she's not in line to inherit the Yerusha anyway. So if we said Ksuba Nasis Moser L'Chavata, then we would say, fine, what we're talking about is, in other words, she's owed her mother's Ksuba, so fine, we consider that Moser, and the two groups of the two groups of sons from the other two wives can inherit their respective ksubas on the basis that there is the leftover money which is going to go to this daughter in payment of her mother's ksuba. But what if you had that there were two wives and one and both of them had sons, and one died while he's alive and one died after him, which then both sets of sons stand to actually inherit the estate. So then you might have been concerned that there might be the problem of arguing, that the second group is going to feel that the first ones are being shown favoritism and inheriting the ksubas bin indichrin. That's why he actually has to mention both points. So he's mentioning that achas b'chayev achas moseh yesh lehem ksubas bin indichrin, meaning that in all cases, even if all the wives, the ones who died before him and the ones who died after him, even if they all had sons, we still apply ksubas bin indichrin. and the detail about moisa dinner tell and the dinner about not about suba nafas moisa lachavata tells us you don't need moisa dinner in that case. As long as if the estate is exactly enough to pay off both subas, then you do that.
So we need both cases.
So we need both of these statements in order to clarify all the different possible scenarios. So that's that, and so that's the bottom line. And so it doesn't matter whether so if both wives die when he's alive, then of course both of them are equally entitled to ksubas min dichrin. The point is, even if one of them outlives him, so now one set of children is inheriting as ksubas min dichrin, the other one is inheriting as a debt that was owed to their mother. We do that. We're not worried about it, about that one group is going to argue with the other. And we don't need moisa dinner in that case, if we had because the one that's owed to the second set is itself considered the moisa. Yeah.
And when there's two wives, when there's three wives, and
same idea. Same idea. If two of them died while he's alive and one died after he's dead, same idea. You give the one who outlived him, her children, whether boys or girls, are entitled to her ksuba as a debt that was owed to her. And so they collect that debt is considered the moiser, and the remainder is the out of the remainder we pay off the other two ksubas bin dichrin. If there's anything left at that point, then we divide it evenly among all the yorshim. And here's the Mishnah: Mishaya nasi shtei nashim umesu. If someone who's married to two wives and they died, ba'achakach meshu, and then he died, the yisaimim of action ksubasim, the yisaimim want to collect their mother's ksubas, the ein shem ala shtei ksubas, and there's only enough for the two ksubas. Chok and b'shava. That's the example that we were talking about before, where we say forget ksubas bin indichrin, we just split the estate evenly among everybody because we don't want to override the din of Yerusha of the Torah. Hayasham moisa dinner, if there is at least one dinner left over, Eilonotin Ksubasimah, then each group gets their mother's ksuba, and we split the dinner among all of them. Why taka does there have to be at least a dinner? One of the Mefarshim, I don't remember now which one, says the idea is because this way, no matter how many Yoshim there are, it's guaranteed each one is going to get at least a prota. A prota is usually the amount, there's usually the minimum amount that's significant in Din Torah. So this way, by making it a dinner, you're guaranteeing that every one of them is going to get an amount of money, which is considered money in Torah.
How many
prutas are in a dinner? I don't remember offhand. I should have looked it up, but I didn't, and I don't remember just now. Let me see. A dinner is one quarter of a shekel, and a shekel has, what is it, I think... Shekel has, I think, 192 prutas in it. I don't remember. So if that's the case, maybe. That number comes up someplace in these dinim, but I don't remember whether. No, I think I might be wrong on that. Yeah, no, I think that's what it is. I think it's 192 prutas to a dinner, if I remember correctly. So whatever you're talking about, even if you had a bunch of wives and all of them had a bunch of children, then yeah. Im Omri Yisaimim. Now, what happens? Im Omri Yisaimim. See, the Yisaimim say, you know what? They're the ones who have now. But you have to remember, you could have a scenario over here, Rashi points out, where one wife has a larger ksuba than the other one. If they all have the same amount of ksuba, then it wouldn't really matter to them whether they inherit equally or whether they get their ksuba's been indifferent. But if one has a larger ksuba, then obviously they have an interest in collecting that. So what if the estate is exactly 500, let's say, exactly enough for 300 and 200, and Imam or Yisaimim, so the Yisaimim from the first group say, you know what, look, if only 500, you're telling us we're going to have to give up our ksubas bin indichrin. Rather than that, anach memalan, on this seven, yafa dinner, kadesh yit, ksubas imon, you know what, fine, what we'll do is we'll overvalue our father's estate, we'll value it at 501 instead of 500, and that way we'll be entitled to get our ksubas bin indichrin. Ain shaymin lahem. We don't listen to them. We don't pay attention to that. El shamanas and nechassim beistin. We figure out the value of the nechassim and beistin.
So the one group of people that tells the abilities by one
uncle. No, we're talking about the ones from the group with the lesser ksuba would have no reason to want to do that.
Right. So why would we even think that one group could take suggestions of one group without the second group?
Okay, because you know if we're willing to pay 500, not to pay whatever, to consider it as if it was worth 501, we'll divide it on that basis. You know,
the two guys, I mean, the one says something very beneficial to you. Why
we'll start? We'll talk about it. We'll have some scenarios about that on another day. The bigger question is, Meforshim talk about, so what's the chiddush anyway? I mean, if you were allowed to do that, then you'd never have the din of moisa dinner.
Yeah.
it's different.
The value they estate.
Right. So I mean, if you always had, if we were to say you have the option to overvalue the estate, yeah, what's the finish?
It's always a misdemeanor, or never a misdemeanor.
Well, yeah. So they talk about the different possibilities. Maybe we're talking about there could be a difference for one thing between whether the Gemara is going to talk about the question what happens if the property goes up or down in value. So that's another issue. But you could argue that there could be a difference between whether it goes up in value of its own. For example, you know, the land now has grown crops and is worth more versus it went up because people are willing to pay more for it. Or you know, anyway. Yeah, we don't listen to them. Shamanas and Akhasim and Basedin, we figure out the value of an Akhasim and Basedin. And by the way, you've never heard of Ksubas bin Indichrin applied nowadays. And there is actually a machlokas among the Ga'onim whether that's the case. Some of the Ga'onim wrote that in fact we don't apply Ksubas bin Indichrin anymore. Others of them said that we do. In fact, among others, Rav Shuda Gaon argues on it with his father, Rav Chanina Gaon. Rav Chanina held that we don't do it anymore. Rav Shuda said that you don't hear people claiming it anymore, but still, if High Gaon actually writes as well that you never hear of anybody judging it. But if it were cut to come to a basin, then sure, they'd still do Ksubas bin Indichrin. So nowadays we don't do Ksubas bin Indichrin. And one idea of it that some of the Gaonim talk about is because, since we're saying over here that you have to figure out the exact value of the nechassim and beis din, are Bate Dinim really nowadays such experts at knowing it down to the last dinner? Not necessarily.
But they can take appraisers.
Yeah, but even so, different appraisers tend to have different opinions. So but it is a machlokas rishonim whether the Rambam still writes that you do ksubas bin indichrin, but other rishonim disagree. As a practical matter, I don't think anybody does it nowadays. There is on top of that, there's another machlokas. We've talked a few times in the Masechta. There was a takana from the Gaonim that you can collect all the things that we learned throughout Shas that can be collected from Karta, that there's a shibud on Karta, that nowadays that applies to Metaltulin as well. That particular takana, everybody agreed to. The question is, does it apply to Ksubas bin Indichrin? That's another machlokes. The Rambam, in fact, holds that not. The Rambam says that given that Ksubas bin Indichrin is kind of shaky anyway, some of the Gaonim are saying yes, some of them are saying not, we may as well leave it according to the original din of the Gemara, and you can only collect it from Karka. Again, other Rishonim disagree with that.
But that's
how the Rambam writes, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and then, you know, not everybody even has Karka nowadays anyway, so the whole Ksubas bin Indichrin kind of became a dead letter. What if there's nechassim that are going to come to a Yerusha to them, but they're not there yet? So Rashi gives the example that, let's say, their father's father was still alive. So eventually their father would have inherited from their father, and since he's dead already, they're going to be inheriting in his place. So there is more property that's going to be eventually coming to them, but right now it's not there. Einan k'b'muchzik, we don't consider it as if it's already muchzik. We don't say that on that basis then there's a moisa dinner. No, we look at how things are right now. Oh, that's the thing. As far as the question of the question of the achronim, what the chiddush of the Mishnah, that even if they say we're willing to overpay, that we don't say there's moisa dinner, what's the chiddush? One answer is that one answer is what if they say right at the moment when their father dies, without it, right at that moment we say, you know what, we're going to overvalue it. No, even though that happened right at that moment, no, we still take it to base din, and yeah. Reb Shimon, afilu yasham nechassim shein lanachrayis, even if we have their extra nechassim shein lanachrayis, meaning it's outblin, einin klum, doesn't count for anything, ashiyusham nechassim sheyesh lanachrayis, yes, I'll shei ksubas dinner, unless you have karka, at least one dinner more than the value of both of the ksubas. As we said before in the Gemara, we discussed that issue. The Gemara starts off, Tana Rabbanan, lezu elef lezu chamesh meyes, what if, for example, one wife had a ksuba of 1,000 zuz, and the other had 500 zuz? So therefore, you need 1,500 to satisfy both Ksubas and Indichrin. Im yasham moisa dinner, so if the estate is worth at least 1,501, then each one gets their mother's Ksuba, and they split the dinner among them. And if not, then they divide everything equally. We ignore Ksubas and Indichrin, and we take the number of Yoshim, add one for the Bechor, and divide it into that many portions. Yeah. So we start out. Pshita. Merubin v'nismatu. Okay, so there's no question. If when the father died, the estate was worth more, at that point there was moisa dinner.
More than what?
More than the value of the ksubas.
1,500.
More than 1,500, yeah. V'nismatu, and then by the time we go to evaluate it, it decreased, and now it's worth 1,500 or less. No question, fazocha ben yoshin. The yoshim already got their schus, they're already entitled to their portion as of the death. And therefore we say that we're going to give them their 1,000 and them their 1,500, even though now there's no Moshe Dayan.
It was 1,501, and now it's...
now, by the time Beit Din gets... now it's 1,500. Let's keep things simple. It's 1,500. Let's keep things simple. Well, what happens? What happens if there's not enough to pay both of them? We're going to get to later in the paper. 1,500. You still give their 1,000 and you still give their 500. Either there's no money to dinner. Doesn't matter. As soon as the father died, they will...
Yes.
What about the question is, what happens the other way around? If the estate was worth exactly 1,500 when he died, and by the time we figure out the value, it's 1,501. My, then what's the din? Tashma, the nixit of Bartzartzer Muatan Minister. However, there was such a case with the nechasim of the family of Bartzartzer, that was the guy's name, Muatan Minister. They were left, and they became more. But also the kamei of Amram, so they came to Rav Amram to ask him to ask him for psak halacha. Amalahu zilu paisinu. So he told the children of the wife with the smaller suba, go mimifias them. Go convince them basically to you're all going to divide it evenly. Go talk them into it basically.
The
other way around. Zillow Paisino means actually go pay them off. Yes, you have a responsibility to pay them off their amount. Loyashkahu, they didn't listen to that. Omalahu, he tells them, Eloy Mephaisito Lahu, if you don't go and pay them off and get them to agree, Machinu Lahu Basilva Deloy Maba Dhamma, I'll hit you with a thorn that doesn't cause blood to flow. Which is an expression saying, in other words, I'm going to put you in chayr. He's telling them that they have to pay off the children with the larger ksuba. You have to go pay them their 1,000.
Why me? This is an estate. After my money?
No, out of the estate. The estate was worth 1,500. So the estate is worth 1,500 at the time the father died. Now, by the time they came to Beis Din, it's 1,501.
Right.
So the children of the second wife, the one with the smaller ksuba, are arguing, look, at the time our father died, it was worth only 1,500. There should not be ksuba spin in Nichrin. We should just divide it evenly. So they came to Rabbi Amram and he told them, no, you have to pay them off.
It was beneficial. The ksuba was so small that it was a very small ksuba, so it was beneficial for them to divide it.
Yes. So, But they didn't want to, so he tells them, you better do that, and if not, then I'm going to put you in chayr.
But they had a lot to gain to consider that...
So let's say, for example, in this case, again, you have, 1,000 and 500. If they'd split it evenly, let's say there were four, let's say there were four of them, and, let's say there are four of them, and let's suppose, forget about a bechor to keep things simple, then each one stands to get about 400 tzuz, whereas if they consider money to dinner, then we're going to say that between the two children of the second and of the second wife, each one's only going to get 250, half 500. Yeah, so obviously they had an interest, but that's why they didn't want to do that. And Rav Amram has to threaten them with chayr. Shadunu lekamei de Rav Nachman, he sent them to Rav Nachman for psak din. Omalehen, he tells them, yes, k'shem shem Reuben b'nismasu zochu b'had yershin. The same way as if they started out a lot and then they became little, you were already zochu with them, and therefore the children of the wife with the larger just as if they were more and then they became less, Zochu behen Yoshin, the Yoshin was Zoche in them, we look at how things were at the time of death, therefore the children of the one with the larger ksuba are entitled to their part. The same way, no, not like Rabbi Amram says, you look at how things were when the father died. When the father died, there was no Moshe dinner, therefore, fine, no more to dinner. They're not entitled to their 1,000. You can go ahead and split things evenly. Stop over here.